64 round day to have another day of doing what we're doing. Feels a little different. But it fits very well together. Srimad Bhagavatam and the holy name. Just as Mahaprabhu spoke or wrote about the holy name having all of his potencies, Nijasarva Shaktis, each and every one of his names. And he has so many names, countless names, each having all of his potencies. So also the Srimad Bhagavatam discloses Krishna, and all of his potencies are within his pastimes. They're just unfolded or revealed. Great acharyas, they have, because of their subtle consciousness, spiritual, fully realized consciousness, they can see, experience, and describe for us, these are some of the potencies of the unlimited personality of Godhead that his pastimes display. Again, the thought is, all of that is within each and every name of Krishna. And through absorption and chanting, according to Haridas Thakur, that gives us access to the form of Krishna, the qualities of Krishna, the pastimes of Krishna, and everything about Krishna. Very packed up in his name. Then his pastimes they're disclosing, we'll hear. The various potencies of Krishna being exhibited. His Sva Shakti. Not something that Krishna has to attain. I mean, the whole notion of becoming one with Krishna is quite silly. Only a fool that doesn't have any understanding of Krishna will think that you can become Krishna, or Krishna has become Krishna. He attained his Krishnahood. It's really silly. Rather, Svashakti, it's his own potencies, and his Svalila, his pastimes, are exhibiting those potencies, and it's all for his pleasure. And his pleasure is the pleasure of his devotees, we'll hear. And even for the non-devotees, Krishna's giving kindness, another one of his excellent qualities. So that same original source of everything, the source of the entire cosmic manifestation, the source of that which exists before this cosmic manifestation becomes manifest, the spiritual world, the material world, and from time to time that original personality Godhead enters into the created region and displays his pastimes of the spiritual region for the benefit and kindness of his devotees and for the non-devotees. He gives his darshan. They don't understand it, but they get benefit anyways. It's very, the pastimes of Krishna are very special. It's similar to the chanting of Krishna's holy name. The non-devotees don't understand, but they get benefit anyways. And the sadhakas, they don't have the full understanding, but they get benefit anyways. And those that have the sincere desire to be reunited again with Krishna and in Krishna's association, he gives more and more and more in reciprocation with their regard for him. Krishna is so kind in the form of his name and in the form of his pastimes. And the Srimad Bhagavatam records those pastimes by the mercy of Vyasadeva. One of the verses that we spoke of on the first evening, Uddhava, of all the devotees outside of Vrindavan, Uddhava is most intimately connected with Krishna. And that's significant in many ways, one of them being as much as any living entity, tiny living entity, can know about the unlimited source of everything, Uddhava's way up there. Shukadeva Goswami also. But Uddhava's appreciation of Krishna is just as many were expressing from yesterday, from the 64-round day, and similarly hearing Krishna's pastimes, something amazing happens. The unlimited source of distress that one finds in this material world without looking for it becomes mitigated. Mitigated is Prabhupada's word translation of gradually diminished. And gradually diminished, as we keep going, becomes thoroughly dismissed. Becomes non-existent. Miseries become mitigated and like an umbrella that keeps away the scorching heat of the sun or the torrential rain. Inside the umbrella there's a little fine droplets of nectar, a sweetness that one can experience just as within the name, because the name also has lotus feet. The Srimad Bhagavatam also has this same capacity, just by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. Same. The door is open, just have to walk through and enter into the courtyard of Krishna's presence through sound vibration. So the topics from Srimad Bhagavatam that we'll be discussing today are three. It's after Krishna leaves Vrindavan, he stays in Vrindavan for some time. He stays in Mathura. He enters Mathura and stays for some time in Mathura. And then from Mathura, he goes to Dwarka. So we're going to be hearing about Krishna's going to Dwarka. And the vast portion of his pastimes, because he entered Mathura when he was 12, and he stayed for a short time, exactly how short, not so clear, some few years. And then the majority of his time was in Dwarka. He moved about, but primarily in Dwarka. So there's a sequence when Krishna left Vrindavan. It was a lila. It's just different parts of Goloka. Because in Goloka, there's different parts. There's the central whirl of the lotus, that's Vrindavan, and then there's the area outside the central whirl, Vrindavan, and that's Mathura, and then there's the area outside Mathura, and that's Dwarka. And then there's a fourth part, that's Svetadvipa, that's where Mahaprabhu has his eternal pastime. So these, he's moving through these different places of pastime and exhibiting pastimes appropriate for the quality of the love that his eternal associates have. Some have the Vrindavan mood, some have the Mathura mood, and some have the Dwarka mood. And Krishna is everything, so he's exhibiting everything, his fullness, in these different pastimes. So when Krishna leaves Vrindavan and goes to Mathura, not all the detail, but the main highlights, he kills Kamsa, preceding that a number of things, the washerman and Kuvalyapida and so forth. The Chanura and Mushtaka, and their three brothers, but he kills Kamsa. And because Kamsa, among the many atrocious things that he did, was he imprisoned his father, who was the king. Kamsa was so powerful. Ugrasena was powerful, but Kamsa was so powerful. He put his father in prison. So Krishna released Vasudeva and Devaki, released Ugrasena, and installed Ugrasena once again as the king of the Yadu dynasty. And then Krishna invited the Yadu dynasty members who had fled when Kamsa took over, to save their lives, because he was so powerful and so wicked, they left. So Krishna invited them to return. And they became happy again as the rulers of the world, the Yadu dynasty. Then Nanda Maharaj, when Krishna had come to Mathura from Vrindavan, Nanda Maharaj came also. So this means Nanda Maharaj saw the whole deal of killing Kamsa and the Chanura and Mushtaka and the whole thing, freeing Vasudeva and Devaki. Now his mood, Nanda Maharaj's mood, is Krishna is my son. So just like Krishna exhibited power lifting Govardhan Hill and so many other things, the love of Nanda Maharaj didn't permit him, or the love of Nanda Maharaj eclipsed any sense of Krishna's divinity. Something different happened in prison when they understood that Krishna had killed Kamsa. They understood his divinity. So when they came before, this is rasa, when they came before Vasudeva and Devaki, they were seeing his Aishwarya feature, although he's just 12, the personality of God. It's something they had seen from the very day of Krishna's birth, this of Krishna's affection for them and their affection for Krishna. Krishna's reciprocating their affection. They wanted Krishna is their son, and Krishna is happy, transcendentally happy, to have that feeling of love from Vasudeva and Devaki. So he covered them with yoga maya, so they would forget of his divinity, stop seeing his opulence, and just see their son. This is Mathura. It exists in an expanded form further in Dwarka, like we discussed yesterday evening. We'll hear some more again today of the mood of Krishna's dear friend, Sudama. So, Nanda Maharaj was still in Mathura, because he had come to pay his annual taxes, and he saw all these things happening. Maharaj saying, we know that the residents of Vrindavan are feeling very much separation from us. So, kindly go back, take some gifts from us to them, and let them know we will come very soon. Because he said that when he left. I'll be back in a few days. So he's repeating, I'll come back very soon. And you can pacify them until we make our way back. We're going to hear at the end of today, Krishna goes back. It's described. So, Nanda Maharaj loves Krishna. He doesn't want separation from Krishna, but Krishna wants him to go back, so reluctantly, he carries the gifts back to Mathura, back to Vrindavan, with Krishna's word. He'll come soon. Next, Vasudeva and Devaki take on their role as mother and father, and they want to see their son go to school. Hasn't been to school yet. So there's this elaborate discussion in one of the Puranas, the Sattvic Puranas, I think Vishnu Purana. It's described Krishna is contemplating which school to go to. We'll hear something more in the second session after breakfast about Krishna's contemplations. So they go to the school of Sandipani Muni and they get educated. Takes a short time. And then they return back to Mathura. And when they return back to Mathura, Krishna because of the love of the resident of Vrindavan, Krishna, not just because they're away, he's off at school and he forgets the resident of Vrindavan. No way. So when he gets back to Mathura, he requests Uddhava to go and tell particularly the gopis and the other residents of Vrindavan, very soon I will come. This is his third time. And there's another purpose also, that's giving Uddhava, his dearmost knowledgeable associate outside of Vrindavan, the qualification to understand and appreciate Vrindavan, the love of those residents in that place, Vrindavan, different than Mathura and different than Dwarka. Unique. Uddhava had that experience. And Devaki, even more so, had that experience because she lived in Vrindavan during the whole childhood pastimes of Krishna. So Uddhava goes. Uddhava comes back bringing the message of what's going on in Vrindavan. With Uddhava, Krishna goes to visit Kubja, because when Krishna had entered Mathura, Kubja was there, and lovingly gave to Krishna and Balaram the fragrances and sandalwood paste and things that were meant for the king, she gave to Krishna and Balaram. And Krishna's reciprocation with her was twofold. First, with just the tips of his fingers under her chin and his toes on her feet. He straightened her hunched back. It was hunched in three places. Trivikra, another of her name beside Kubja. she became straight and very beautiful and requested Krishna's companionship. So with Uddhava, Krishna went and satisfied Kubja. Then Krishna is also concerned, the affectionate, kind Krishna is concerned about the circumstance in Hastinapur. So he sent Uddhava to Vrindavan. Now he goes to visit with Uddhava. He goes to visit Akura. And Akura is the one that had brought him to Mathura because he's very qualified as a minister. That's why he comes as summoned him, because he's the best. The Krishna similarly, rather than calling Akura to come see him, Krishna went to see Akura because he's elder, Uncle Akura, and honored Akura. He's a great devotee of Krishna, member of the Yadu dynasty. But Krishna made a request for Akura to go to Hastinapur and do like a spy mission. Stay there long enough so you can get a full sense of what's going on in Hastinapur. So Akura went, and he spent 3 months. He stayed at the house of Akura, and while he was staying at the house of Akura, he was meeting everybody. And he got a very clear sense of the hostility between sons of Dhritarashtra, headed by Duryodhana, and the Pandavas, and Queen Kunti. So he made a departing effort. It's described in Mahabharata. He spent all evening long, all night long, into the sunrise the next morning, very expertly explaining to Dhritarashtra the consequence of what he was doing. Very artfully and tactfully and expertly he explained all of this, and the conclusion of Dhritarashtra was, everything that you say is right. I accept it, but I can't do it because I'm too attached. And there'll be consequences. You've spelled out the consequences. I'll just have to accept the consequences because I'm too attached. So Akura left and carried that message back to Krishna. So all this is being narrated by Shukadeva Goswami, and one might think, the Acharya's comment, Krishna's got to do something about Vrindavan, or Krishna's got to do something about Hastinapur, or both. But surprisingly, Shukadeva Goswami doesn't go further with either one of those. And he begins speaking about Jarasandha. So it's a whole new section, Jarasandha. And the description goes that after Kamsa was killed, there were two wives of Kamsa who were daughters of Jarasandha. And Garga Samhita describes in great detail how that happened. The daughters, the princesses of Jarasandha became married to Kamsa. So narrate that. Jarasandha was the son of Brihadrath. Brihadrath was the king of Magadha. And his father was the king of a larger territory. He had given the Magadha province to Jarasandha to rule. And Jarasandha got the name Jarasandha in a very interesting way. Brihadrath had two queens. They were from Benares. And he was a very powerful king. And he ruled his kingdom fairly, according to principles of Dharma. And everything was fine, except he had no children. And so he, out of frustration, left his kingdom and went to the forest and just decided to live a life of austerity and penance. While he was there in the forest, he came across one sage, and he began assisting the sage, just the sage's austerities and so forth. And the sage took compassion upon him and came to understand what his circumstance was. So the sage, forget his name, gave him, when he asked Jarasandha, "What, you were a king, why did you leave?" "Because I was unable to have sons." So the sage gave Jarasandha, gave Brihadrath a fruit and said, "Give this to your wife, and your wife can eat the fruit, and then she will bear a son." And Jarasandha didn't bother, Brihadrath didn't bother to tell the sage, "I have two queens." So instead he cut the fruit in half, gave one half to one queen, one half to the other queen, and in time two sons were born, but half and half. He was shocked. And he didn't know what to do, so he took the two halves and had them sent to the forest and discarded them in the forest. And one Rakshasi named Jara, she found them. She thought, dinner. So she took the two halves and slapped them together in her hands, and the two halves formed a whole little baby. And somehow she didn't have the heart to eat the baby. So she took the baby back to the king. The king was very happy. And he gave the child the name Jarasandha, the putting of the two halves together by Jara. So he became Jarasandha. And Jarasandha became a worshipper of Lord Shiva. And in course of time, through his ardent worship of Lord Shiva, he became very powerful. He had some special benedictions from Jara, who invested this little baby with special powers, mystical powers, and then Lord Shiva also granted him special powers, so he was a very powerful person, practically invincible. So one day, Jarasandha was in the forest, using his prowess to challenge wild animals in the forest, tigers and lions, and he captured a huge elephant that he named Kuvalyapida. And this elephant, according to Garga Samhita, was as big as 10 elephants, humongous elephant. And he captured the elephant alive, and he put iron stakes in the ground with iron chains attached to the stakes and wrapped around the legs of the four legs of Kuvalyapida. But Kuvalyapida was too strong, stronger than the stakes in the ground, and he pulled the stakes out and went running, the elephant run, in a northerly direction. And it was miles. And so the soldiers of Jarasandha were chasing behind him. And he ended up in a camp where camped out, because Kamsa was also on a tour, not hunting wild animals in the forest, but Kamsa was on a tour just himself, not even his whole army, of confronting other kings. Garga Samhita has really long description of kings after kings. It was just like his program. Just going and defeating the entire army of other kings, leaving the king standing alone, standing before options. Either I'll kill you right now, as I killed your entire army, or you can be subservient to me. Which would you rather have? In this way, he was building a consolidation of persons who would be loyal to him. So he was on one of those campaigns. And Kuvalyapita came charging at Kamsa. So Kamsa started punching him and threw him to the ground and picked him up by one of his legs and threw him, whirled him around and around and threw him several miles in the air. He came crashing down at Jarasandha's camp, Garga Samhita describes this. And Jarasandha thought, wow, that was good. I want to find out who is that person who was able to throw this biggest 10 elephants, elephant like that. So he followed the direction from which Kuvalyapita had come, and he found Jarasandha. And he introduced himself, and Kamsa introduced himself, and he said, I'm in great admiration of your strength, and I'd like to reciprocate with you by gifting you, you can take back to your own kingdom in Magadha, this elephant Kuvalyapita, you can be your pet. And I'd like to give my two daughters in marriage to you, so there'll be an alliance between my kingdom and your kingdom. So Jarasandha, king of Magadha, and Kamsa, who was the son of Ugrasena, became allies through marriage. So when Kamsa was killed, apparently there were no sons, because in Vedic culture, a girl, then in the care of a husband, and then if the husband dies early, then in the care of the sons of the father or her father. So they went to her father, their father, Jarasandha, and pleaded their case. This teenager killed our husband. Powerful Kamsa was killed. Take revenge. So Jarasandha took a vow. I'll not just take revenge, I'll destroy the entire Yadu dynasty. You see. So this revenge thing doesn't work very well. He gathered Hini divisions of soldiers, which is a lot, according to the Bhagavatam, besides, you know, the elephants and the infantry and the chariot drivers and the this and the that. It's 5,030,000 soldiers. And he went marching with his 5,030,000 soldiers and the Yadu army to a fight. So the messengers came to Krishna and Balaram saying, after you're killing Kamsa, that Asti and Prapti, the two daughters of, or two wives of Kamsa, have gone back and Jarasandha wants revenge. So the Bhagavatam describes Krishna, a human. He began to consider, what's the best thing to do? I could destroy the entire army and leave Kamsa. I could destroy Kamsa and leave the entire army, or I could destroy both. He had three choices. He chose to leave Kamsa alive, destroy the entire army, and that way Jarasandha would go back, gather another army, and bring the next army, because I've appeared in this world with Balaram to annihilate demoniac kings, and very kindly Jarasandha will do this nice service. He'll bring so many demoniac people, and I can destroy them, and we don't have to go anywhere. So he made that decision. And as he made that decision, the Bhagavatam describes two in the sky with fine horses, and manifest there were the weapons of Krishna and Balaram. Now, Krishna already had his Sharanga bow and his Sudarshan, but other weapons of Krishna and Balaram were manifest. The Sambartaka, same name as the Sambartaka cloud of Indra that brings about destruction, the time of cosmic annihilation. The club of Balaram has the same name. Then there's another weapon sometimes you've seen in paintings of Balaram. In addition to on one side is the plow, he's carrying some other instrument. Pestle. So pestle is, you grind spices and things with a pestle, mortar and pestle. So it's a pestle. So Nanda, according to what Krishna says later, these are personified. They're associates of Krishna and Balaram. They're persons, and they exist in the spiritual world, and they just... Just by Krishna didn't even have to say, okay, come on, chariot and weapons, we're ready. They just descended. And club, komadi, komadaki, Balaram's club, and Balaram also had a bow. So all the weapons were there, standing by the chariot, personified. And Krishna smiled and turns to Balaram and said, this is our reason for having come into this world, to annihilate demoniac kings. There's one big one, Jarasandha. And there's with him are so many others. So now is the time for us to perform our pastime. So he's moving between... Because it's Mathura, he's moving between worldly and otherworldly, or lordly disposition. And he says to Balaram, actually, you don't need any weapons. But they're your devotees and you want to give them some service, and so let's go. So, wearing armor, this is now the human side, decked in armor, carrying their weapons, they mount the chariot, and they, along with some of the Yadu dynasty, they come out into the battlefield. There's not 5 million of them, it's a small army in comparison. And when Jarasandha sees Krishna and Balaram, he doesn't want to fight them. He came to fight them. He came to destroy the Yadu dynasty. He made a vow he would destroy the Yadu dynasty and take revenge. But he just criticizes Krishna and says, You're too young. And you're not even worthy of a fight because you ran away from Kamsa and you went and hid yourself in Vrindavan for 12 years. And another is you're not even a Kshatriya, you're a Vaishya. And not only that, you killed your relative. You killed Kamsa, who is the maternal uncle of Krishna. So, you're not worthy, I don't want to fight you. And he was thinking that Balaram is more qualified than, so I'll fight him, not you. Now, Acharya's comment that this is part of the character of a demon, that they see in others faults when they themselves and others who they associate with have far greater faults. But what Krishna did in relation to Kamsa was perfectly appropriate, although there was some relation, because of the sinful activity, Manu Samhita, bound to be given death penalty. It was perfectly righteous act. So he's criticizing Krishna for a perfectly righteous act, saying nothing about Kamsa, his perfectly sinful activities, his son-in-law. So he turns to Balaram and says, if you have courage, you come forward and we'll fight. Balaram gets his club ready and his plow ready, and Krishna says, you talk too much. Real heroes don't boast like you, but persons who are fools, they speak all kinds of nonsense because they know they're about to die. And which angers Jarasandha. So Jarasandha calls his army of 5 million to come and begin combat. There's a little footnote here. Yeah. This figure of 5 million that were all destroyed in one day happens again another 16 times, or a total of 17 times. So 17 times 5 is 85. Plus 30,000 times 17. It comes to more than 85,500,000 soldiers were killed in those 17 different attacks on Mathura. In the whole of World War I and World War II, 2.6 million and 1.7 million. 1.17 million. So it's, you know, like, something like four to five times the number of persons killed than World War I and World War II combined. It's a big battle. So when Jarasandha's army starts attacking, here is Shukadeva Goswami, just as the wind covers the sun with clouds, or a fire with dust, the son of Jara marched towards the two descendants of Madhu, and with his huge assemblage of armies surrounded them and their soldiers. So watching from the rooftops in Mathura are the ladies, and they're all crying, oh, it's unfair match, these two young teenagers fighting against 5 million soldiers of Jarasandha. So what Krishna does is he calls upon his bow, his charanga bow, and the description is he fired arrows from the charanga bow in a non-stop fashion. It describes like a firebrand. So, you know, maybe you've seen, if you have something burning, like a burning stick or something, and move it really fast, it looks like a circle. So the sequence of drawing the bowstring, putting the arrow, taking the arrow from the quiver, putting the arrow on the bowstring, drawing back the bowstring, and firing the arrow, that's a series of steps. But because of Krishna's omnipotence, it was happening again and again and again and again and again and again and again, so fast it was nonstop. Now, for us, we can't imagine that. But for Krishna, it's no problem. The word is nirantaram, continuous, nonstop. Then there's this nice explanation about the charanga bow. Now, the charanga bow, little history, Vishvakarma fashioned it for Lord Vishnu, the charanga bow. And he similarly fashioned a bow for Lord Shiva. And that Lord Shiva bow was Pinaka and charanga. And Lord Brahma, he was curious. Who's the greater archer? Vishnu or Lord Shiva? So, the detail isn't given, but he instigated some tension between them, and they had a bow battle. And the bow battle was so fierce, the description is, that the whole of the universe was disturbed. And Krishna then fought Shiva. He became paralyzed. So Brahma came rushing forward saying, Vishnu's the victor. Please stop fighting. So out of frustration and anger, Lord Shiva gave his bow to an ancestor of King Janak. So that bow of Lord Shiva, Pinaka, was in the custody of Janak, and that was the requirement to string the bow that took, what was it, 30 men? How many? Some number of men on it carried, just pulling it on wheels to get it out to where Ram could string it and then broke it. So that and the Pinaka bow. Then the Charanga bow, Krishna, Vishnu decided to do the same thing that Lord Shiva had done. He gave it in charity to a sage. Do you know the sage's name? Very similar to your previous name. Yeah. Your previous name is Rishika. This is Richika. Richika. Sage Richika was the grandfather of Parashuram. So the son of Richika was Janmadagni. He got Vishnu's bow. And Janmadagni gave the bow to Parashuram. Parashuram gave the bow to Lord Ramachandra. When that end of the pastime of Parashuram destroying the kings 21 times, the demoniac kings, then this encounter just after Ram broke Lord Shiva's bow, he was given Lord Vishnu's bow. Must have been a big bow. And when the test was there for Ram to string the bow, he easily strung the bow and twanged it. And everyone. So Parashuram left that bhav of being the warrior and returned to this position of being a brahmana. So Ram now has this bow of Lord Vishnu. And Ram, at a certain point in time in his pastimes, he gave the bow to Varuna. Then some time passed, Varuna has the bow, and during the Kandava forest pastime, when Krishna was requested by the devas to assist Indra, requested, Krishna wanted some weapons. So Varuna came forth with the Sharanga bow and gave the Sharanga bow to Krishna. And at the end of Krishna's pastimes, he threw the bow back in the sea, returning it to Varuna. So who knows where the Sharanga bow is today? Pinaka was finished. So Krishna now has this Sharanga bow, the one that he's using to destroy the entire army of Jarasandha. But he wasn't alone. Balaram was by his side, and with his Komadaki club, he was smashing and smashing. It said, there's a long, gory description of a river of blood with different pieces of bodies floating here and there, and the hair of the soldiers looked like seaweed, and their arms looked like fish, and, you know, the parts of the chariots looked like floating pieces of wood, and Balaram, when he began with his club, the whole thing overflooded. So there's this sea of dead bodies, 5 million. Leaving just one soldier remaining. Jarasandha. So Balaram pounced on him. And rather than kill him, he started tying him up with celestial rope of Varuna and other worldly ropes. And Krishna came and stood before Balaram saying, let him go. He's a small fry, let him go. And so Balaram did what Krishna requested, and Jarasandha was totally humiliated because he's this macho, powerful, everyone's afraid of me warrior. He just, two teenagers just defeated him. The entire army was destroyed. Not one soldier from the Yadu dynasty member was harmed at all. And there he is standing alone. So he's heading back for his kingdom in Magadha, contemplating karma sannyas. I'll just give up being a king and go to the forest and engage in severe penances and austerities. But as he was traveling back to Magadha, he met some other kings. And the other king said, no. It was just your karma. And one should not fault oneself, or others should not fault one for one's past karma, meeting up, and it was just destined you were to be defeated. Plus, you just didn't have the sense of the power of the Yadu army, and you shouldn't stop being a king. You're Jarasandha. You're Mr. Mighty. So, just get another army together. Next time you'll be prepared and go back and defeat the Yadu dynasty. That'll be nice. So he thought, yeah, I'm powerful. So meanwhile, so he got another army together and came in 16 more times. Same thing happened. Meanwhile, Krishna took all the, with Balaram, I guess after the river subsided, they gathered the ornaments that were decorating the soldiers and the horses and their chariots and big, big booty of gold and jewels and presented them all to Ugrasena. They had a big festival in Mathura honoring Krishna and Balaram. It's different, but it's also similar. When Krishna would kill a demon in Vrindavan, the cowherd boys would celebrate, how wonderful is Krishna. And they go back and tell parents and the people that were back in Vraja, what Krishna did today. He killed this demon, that demon. They go, wow, how wonderful is our Krishna. So in Mathura it's a little different, but very similar. It's bhava. It's a mood of love for Krishna and Balaram. So the honor, the respectability of Krishna and in his this opulent feature, although Ugrasena is king, he is honoring Ugrasena as king and taking this seemingly worldly position, although he's exhibiting his divinity. He's honoring the elder, Ugrasena. So after 16 times of a rerun of the same movie, the 17th time when Jarasandha was coming, it was simultaneously with the visit from another king named Kaliyavana. And Kaliyavana, according to the Bhagavatam, was from some direction south of Mathura. And Kaliyavana was an intensely fierce warrior. And the description is given again, this is in Vishnu Purana, the history of how Kaliyavana became Kaliyavana was that Gargi or Gargya, so it's either Gargamuni, some versions say it's Gargamuni, some say it's the son of Gargamuni named Gargi. So, in any case, Gargya was criticized or ridiculed as being a eunuch. And he was really, really insulted. Some person spoke like that. Members of the Yadu dynasty laughed when they heard it being spoken like that. He's a son of a brahmana and being called a eunuch. So he became very vengeful. He went into the forest, worshipping Lord Shiva, eating powdered iron only for 12 years. Yummy. And Lord Shiva appeared before him and he asked what do you want? I'd like to have a son who will bring fear to the whole Yadu dynasty. So the benediction was given from Lord Shiva. So Krishna upheld that benediction in the following way. After some time, Gargya returned back to Mathura, and there was this king of this province from the south who was unable to have children, and during Dwarpa Yuga this was permitted that a brahmana could be invited to produce a child with the king's queen, with the wife of the king. So Gargya did that, and Kaliyavana was born. And it said that he had the fury of this feature of Lord Shiva at the time of devastation. So powerful, powerful, intensely furious, raging with fury, king couldn't find anybody equal as his match to fight. So one time Narada was visiting and Kaliyavana asked, who's the most powerful rulers on this planet? He said, by far, it's the Yadu dynasty. No question about it. Oh, very good. Thank you. I'm going to go right now to the Yadu dynasty and wage war with them. So Kaliyavana's army came from the south and Jarasandha's army came from the east. And news came to Krishna and Balaram of Kaliyavana's army had come. And he was thinking, Jarasandha's army is also coming. We have to do something. Acharyas say to, he could have easily just annihilated the entire army of Kaliyavana, but he wanted to uphold the word of Lord Shiva, because that's one of Krishna's qualities. He upholds the words of his devotees. So instead of destroying Kali, he said, you hold off the army, Balaram, you hold off the army of Kaliyavana. I'm going to have Vishvakarma construct a city that apparently had some historical connection to Mathura. Prabhupada comments about this in Krishna book. And in one sense, it became an extension of the Yadava dynasty or Yadava kingdom. The Chedi kingdom covered this territory, and the Magadha kingdom covered that territory, and the Yadu kingdom. There was time when the Yadu kingdom went all the way down to Kerala. There are different maps showing different periods of time. So in any case, Vishvakarma built Dwarka, and the Bhagavatam describes the circumference of the city of Dwarka was, and it was a, started with a huge wall that went around and enclosed what later became the first of the Dwarka fort inside this 96-mile circumference. It's with the measure of one yojana equals 8 miles, it was 12 yojanas, so 96 miles. And then palaces and this is Dwarka that Krishna had built. He designed it. Vishvakarma built it. This new, well-constructed city, developed within the sea, had regular planned roads, streets, and lanes. There were also well-planned paths. And there were gardens filled with plants, kalpavriksha trees, and assorted flowering trees. The city was filled with many palaces and huge gates to enter. The palaces and gates held golden water pots, and their upper levels were made of quartz. All the buildings were multi-stories. The main carriage roads were in the front, and the secondary roads are behind them, and courtyards in between. So lots of, there's a good vastu arrangement, lots of place where it's open and gorgeous, and not just buildings next to each other. The buildings were surrounded with walls, and within the walls there's a courtyard before the building, and there were crystal watchtowers crowned with golden pots surrounding those walls. Golden water pots, apparently they're popular. Within the rooms, the bedrooms were all bedecked with jewels. The floors were maracatta jewel mosaics. Along with the houses, there were treasury buildings, warehouses, stables for fine horses. The stables were made of brass and silver. Pretty fancy horse barns. Each residence had a watchtower and a temple of Lord Vishnu. And the residences were arranged according to Varna and Ashram, this, you know, different groups. And the chief of all of the residential places was the palace of King Ugrasena. So this was done really fast, practically like overnight. And when it was completed, while the residents of Mathura were asleep, the Yadu dynasty members, they were all mystically transported in the dead of night, and they woke up the next morning in a new palace. thinking this was pretty amazing. But must be Krishna's work because he's all powerful. So Krishna then, as a detail that's a little mysterious, Krishna returned and he said to Balaram, you're in charge, you're my elder brother, you're in charge of this new place. Now, he stayed there because the battle was going to resume, and Krishna went out onto the battlefield without armor, without weapons, and Kalyavana had heard about Krishna from who? Narada Muni. So, from Narada Muni, he heard a description of Krishna's appearance. So, when he saw Krishna come out on the battlefield, he understood from Narada's description that must be him. Now, we have other examples, like Rukmini. She also heard about Krishna, and her reaction was very different. So, hearing about Krishna can act differently depending upon your heart. And for Kalyavana, he just wanted someone he could fight with. So, he was interested in a good fight, that's all. So, here's the person who can give me a good fight. Because that was his disposition. And Jiva Goswami says, Krishna is very kind. By giving his darshan to Kalyavana, Kalyavana was freed from all of his sins. But being freed from one's sins doesn't mean you become a devotee. You can achieve a moksha condition and not become a devotee. So devotees don't aspire for moksha. Devotees aspire for devotion, the opportunity to be engaged in loving service to Krishna. So when Krishna went rushing out into the battlefield and he saw Kalyavana, he started to run. So Kalyavana thought, well, I could destroy him because I'm Kalyavana, but I won't because he doesn't have any weapons and he had that much dignity that he wouldn't fight with Krishna with weapons when Krishna had no weapons. It's just a Kshatriya standard. So he started chasing Krishna. And Krishna was always just a couple steps out of reach. So Kalyavana ran a little faster and Krishna ran a little faster and they ran and ran and ran. Jiva Goswami said he ran in a southerly direction, which is in the direction of where Kalyavana lived, but he entered into a place, Jiva Goswami comments, a well-known place. I never heard of the place before, but it's in Rajasthan. It's a mountain in Rajasthan, because in Mathura district area, other than Nandagram and Varsana, there's no mountains, or in Govardhan Hill. There's no mountains. It's all flat. So he had went all the way to the place where Muchakunda was, in a cave in a mountain. Now, some of us went to Dwarka, and we heard a fib, where in the Raivata mountain, where pastimes of Krishna did take place, they were saying, and over there is the cave of Muchakunda, which isn't true. And I checked it with Dinabandhu. He said, I don't know anything about that cave, but everybody knows, and Jiva Goswami confirms, the place where that mountain actually is. Here's what Jiva Goswami writes. can't find the name. A mountain in Krishna. What's the state that's right next to UP? Rajasthan. So Krishna's running, and Kalyavana's running after him. And Krishna enters the cave of Muchukunda. And Kalyavana is thinking, Krishna's trying to hide from me. He's afraid of me. I'm Kalyavana. He's afraid of me. But I want to fight him. So Kalyavana also enters the cave. And when he enters the cave, Krishna specifically hides himself. Now, Krishna is effulgent, so he withdrew his effulgence so that he could remain hidden. And over in the side of the cave, Kalyavana saw a man lying. And he thought, oh, Krishna's tired. He's been running too much. He must have laid down, thinks I won't find him. So with all of his might, he kicked the sleeping body. And when he kicked the sleeping body, it wasn't Krishna. It was Muchukunda, a devotee of Krishna. Now here's something also Jiva Goswami says. Muchukunda was the son of Mandata, who lived during the first of the yuga cycles in the Vaivasvata Manu. This is 28th yuga cycle. He's been asleep a long time. Because Muchukunda, we'll find out a little bit more later, Muchukunda had gone to Gargamuni. Now apparently this is when Krishna's pastimes take place, there's different persons who occupy those positions in Krishna's pastimes. So it's a Gargamuni 27 yuga cycles ago. That had told, he was an expert astrologer. And Gargamuni told him, oh, you have a very good chart. You're going to see Krishna. You're going to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. But Krishna doesn't appear for another 27 yuga cycles. But you're going to see him. I can see it's in your chart. And then Gargamuni described Krishna, the form and features and the appearance of Krishna. So in this way, Muchukunda, just by hearing about Krishna, as does Kalyavana from Narada Muni, or Rukmini from Narada Muni, he heard from Gargamuni about Krishna, who hadn't appeared yet. So he became a great devotee of Krishna. I'm going to meet Krishna. So his life was, like we were discussing yesterday, in the preparing for the 64 round day, or the entering into the mood of Sharanagati, there must be, in the case of Muchukunda, there was a strong desire. We also hear about Krishna. And we can understand, if we follow the process of bhakti properly, we will see Krishna. Prabhupada said this about deity worship. The deity form of Krishna is also Krishna, especially those of you who are pujaris. You're very attentive to this. Prabhupada said you worship Krishna in his deity form as a person, and Krishna accepts that loving service, and one day he will speak with you. And he will say, I am like this. So, we're not there yet. Krishna isn't speaking to us unless we're delirious or filled with pure devotion. And then Krishna will speak with you. So, having heard about Krishna, he became a great devotee. But he was a mixed great devotee. Great devotees can also be mixed. And he was on this, he describes later, we'll hear, whoops, I'm not doing so well with time. Here later, about Muchukunda's description of Dainya. Beautiful expressions of humility, of how he wasted, just like Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his Sharanagati Dainya section, how he wasted his time in material activity. But all the while hankering for this sight of Krishna, he was such a powerful king that he was with his armies, he would travel here and there all over the planet. He was such a powerful king that the demigods, when they were in difficulty, they would request Mandata to come and assist them. So Mandata did that. He went to the heavenly planets, and without sleep on the heavenly planets, he was engaged in battle for almost a year. And at the end of a year, Kartikeya, the son of Lord Shiva, came and said, I'll be the chief general. You did a good job. You can go back now. But you should know that if you go back now, many cycles of the yugas have passed because the demigod time and the earthly time are very different. All of your relatives, your whole kingdom, everything's gone, destroyed by the force of time. But time is also on your side because you're a devotee, so you tell us what it is that you would like, and it'll be yours. So he thought two things. I'm really tired. So I'd like a long period of rest. But also, Garga Muni, he told me that I'll see Krishna. And that's 16 yuga cycles from now, at least in earthly time. Maybe some have passed already, but if I'm asleep, then the time will pass very quickly. I won't even notice it. And if I'm just waiting and waiting, it'll be very difficult. So let me just have rest, please. And if anybody interrupts me, Indra or anybody else who wants me to go do another battle for them, I want the benediction that when I open my eyes and see them, they'll burn into ashes instantly. Now, what's a devotee want a benediction like that for? So that when in service to Krishna, I won't be dragged into other things. So, he was given that benediction. He went to that cave, and when Kalyavana kicked him, suddenly startled, because he's been asleep a long time. It wasn't a gradual, it was very abrupt and rude awakening. He opened his eyes, kind of groggy, and instantly the body of Kalyavana burst into flames and a pile of ashes in the middle of the cave. End of the story for Kalyavana. Now Krishna didn't have to kill him. Rather, he gave the service to his devotee, like Krishna gave the service to Arjuna to do the Kurukshetra battle fighting, although Krishna was the one that was doing it. So after that startling event of being woken and Kalyavana burning, Krishna then made himself available in such a manner his effulgence again lit up the cave, and Kalyavana could see him. And the description is there of the features of Krishna in a four-armed form standing before him. And Kalyavana is puzzled. He's never seen Krishna. He heard the description of Krishna, and he's thinking, maybe this is Krishna. Obviously, his effulgence and his beautiful features and everything about him, his mere presence was, he's not an ordinary person. So, who are you? Are you a demigod? Are you the personality of Godhead? Please disclose who you are and where you have come from. And Krishna was silent. So then he said, let me tell you who I am. I'm the son of Mandata from the Ikshvaku dynasty. So this is a different dynasty than Krishna's. He's from the sun dynasty and Krishna's from the moon dynasty. We know this from the ninth canto Bhagavatam. Now Krishna's answer is really far out. O King, the greatest sages, even knowers of Vedanta, cannot enumerate my births and activities which take place throughout the three phases of time. But never do they reach the end of them. I have taken thousands of births, lived thousands of lives, and accepted thousands of names. In fact, my births, activities, and names are limitless. You wonder who am I? And thus, even I cannot count them. After many lifetimes, someone might count the dust particles on the earth. But no one can ever finish counting my qualities, activities, names, and births. Nonetheless, since you've asked, I'll tell you. Long time ago, Lord Brahma made an appeal that I should appear on earth to eliminate from the earth the demoniac kings. So I agreed, and I appeared in the Yadu dynasty as the son of Anakundundubi. That's a name of Vasudeva. And because I am the son of Vasudeva, I am known as Vasudeva. You may also know that I've killed Kalanemi, reborn as Kamsa, as well as Pralamba and other enemies of the pious. And now, O King, this barbarian, this pile of ashes over here, has been destroyed by your glance. Since in the past, in your previous life, before your present condition, you acted as my great devotee. You repeatedly prayed to me. Therefore, I have personally come to this cave to show you mercy, for I am affectionately inclined to my devotees. Now you can see me to your heart's content. Prayers, the hankering of the soul, the same Sharanagati message that they connect, the pastimes of Krishna and our approach to the holy name. What's in your heart, how you approach Krishna in the form of his holy name, or the deity form, or the scripture form, or his dear devotees. It's very important, the regard, the searching, the hankering, the redirecting of desire, deflecting from material absorption, deflecting from Brahman, I want to become one with the supreme absorption, to the desire to be in the association and service of Krishna always, and in the association of Krishna's devotees, who are not attached to those material things or to liberation things. They're just attached to being in the eternal service of Krishna. This is the Sadhu Sangha principle that carries one to the stage of spiritual perfection when properly cultivated. Jiva Goswami says, Krishna is saying, I've not come here in this cave to kill Kaliyavana. That could have been done by many means, and you took care of it. I came to give my mercy to you. And why have I come to give my mercy to you? Because you wanted it. If you don't want it, I won't. But if you want it, I will. So what do you want? Material prosperity? A life where it's not cold like it is in New Jersey? A life of... What do you want? Fame? Popularity? Etc., etc. The list goes on endlessly. So for those who simply want Krishna, Krishna gives himself to those persons. Even in this beginning stage that we've been hearing, Jiva Goswami saying, even in the Abha stage, just say the first syllable. Say the other ones too, but Krishna becomes attracted. What to speak of if we call with deeper hankering, Krishna shows his form as he's saying to Muchakunda. You can feast your eyes upon my form as long as you like. Then he says, you may ask for me any benediction you like. And whatever it is, the answer is yes. Blank check, just fill in the amount. How much do you want? It is my eternal principle that anyone who comes under my shelter must have all his desires fulfilled by my grace. Really nice. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, why is it that people don't feel that fulfillment? Or why do we lament? And he says there's commonly three things. We just have this feeling of being incomplete. Or something we're striving for, we lose it. Or something we're striving for, we don't get. So we lament. No. Kamesha Krodesha. Here, Krishna is reassuring, for my devotee, they don't lament. They're not feeling incomplete because they're feeling connected to the complete. They're not hankering for something they don't have because they have everything, Krishna. And whatever they may lose, that's insignificant also because, you know, like, your health or your life or whatever it is. Whatever it is. Something that's very near and dear to you. Your shoes. Someone takes your shoes. I had this... Gee, it's 9:30 already. I'm staying at Prem Kishore's home, and his wife and son, Vig, went with some his friends to Epcot Center. I didn't tell them the story, but I'll tell you the story. Sridhar Swami, my godbrother Sridhar Swami, we stayed together. We were adjacent rooms at the Brooklyn Temple for several years. We were co-GBC, and we had breakfast and lunch together every day for years. It was a different period of time. I didn't travel so much. So our relationship was very close. He became diagnosed with having hepatitis C. He was told he was going to die in a year. So he took to worship of Lord Nrisimhadev. Lots of many other things. But with his disciple, Mayapur, I think is his name. Mayapur Shasi. They went to visit Epcot Center. And then he came back after visiting Epcot Center and told me that while they went inside, because they had an out-of-state plate, someone broke into the trunk of the car and they left his dhoties because that wasn't valuable. But they took his computer and they took his deities, Lord Nrsingadev deity. And I said, wow, whoever did that, they're going to get pulverized. And he smiled. He said, no, Lord Nrsingadev, very merciful. You know, he's very merciful. The pulverizing people that steal his deity form is merciful. He said, no, no, it's not like that. Something's going to happen to that person that now has Lord Nrsingadev. Something Benedict, he was like totally detached. He's been worshiping these deities. I was amazed. With that attachment to his deity comes the detachment from not having the deity, because it's the merciful Lord Nrsingadev is going to go somewhere else and give us mercy somewhere else. It was really amazing. Anyway, so no lamentation for the devotee, because so he's now, Michikunda's been offered this benediction. Whatever you'd like. And the light goes on fully for Michikunda. He wanted to know, who are you? So he's now found out who he is. He bowed before Krishna with all humility. Remembered Garga's words that you would meet Krishna face to face. In the 28th millennium of Vaivasvata Manu, Krishna will appear and you will see him. So he started speaking. O Lord, the people of this world, both men and women, are bewildered by your illusory energy. Unaware of their seek happiness by entangling themselves in family affairs, which are actually sources of misery. And he's including himself in this category. Many things. Like a dumb animal that has fallen into a blind well, such a person has fallen into the darkness of a material home. A touchstone for a few pennies. We have this valuable human form of life and we squander it. It's out of all the different species of life that one can transmigrate through, when one gets this human form of life, it is the opportunity by the design of the Creator to get out of the cycle of birth and death. And one doesn't do that, instead tries to become the enjoyer of temporary things. Such a fool. And that's what Michikunda is saying. Most people, almost all people, are in this very embarrassing, compromised, foolish position. These detachment words, so much. Foolish persons, without knowledge of the importance of their human form of life, spoil it simply for sense gratification and die without any useful purpose. I am not an exception to this universal law of material nature. I have wasted all this time. Think of the Sharanagati songs, if you're familiar with them. It's Sharanagati, the dying dissection. I've become more and more intoxicated by my domain and opulence as an earthly king, misidentifying the mortal body as the self, becoming attached to children, wives, treasury, land. I suffered endless anxiety. As my misconception of life intensified, I began to think of this material body with just a bag of flesh and bones is all in all. And in my vanity, I believed that I had become the king of human society. I began to travel all over the world, accompanied by my military strength, soldiers, charioteers, elephants, horses, assisted by many commanders, and puffed up by powers. I could not trace out your lordship, who always sits within my heart as the most intimate friend. I did not care for you. And this was the fault of my so-called material condition. exalted material condition. Because of attachment to sense gratification, one becomes thoroughly deluded and inattentive. Pramatha is one of the ten offenses against the holy name. Inattentiveness. Well chanted. Due to attentiveness to other. Have you noticed? In the lives of devotees, it's the attachment to our service, which is, in one sense, is better than attachment to the sense gratification, but what about the person who is to be served? Are we attentive to the person who is to be served or the service that's awaiting us and attached to that instead of the object, the person, the affinity for the person? We're not there yet until that affinity for the person. This is the lamentation of Muchakunda. Thinking that he must do certain actions in the world, one develops ever-increasing greed. Even though his desires are frustrated, he is still eager for those objects. However, your lordship remains fully attentive. Ah, Pramatha. Krishna doesn't lose attention. We've lost attention. He's still our well-wisher, and while we turned our back, that's how kind is Krishna, ever kind. And with your time energy, he's saying, you take away everything, whatever that stuff he's inattentively to you thinking of with all of his attention, Krishna, you kindly take it all away. Like a hungry snake licking its fangs before a mouse. Or the black snake hungrily, swiftly swallows a small rat without leniency. You appear before him as death. One moment you're riding as a king, the next minute you're ashes or worm or stool, the body. My dear Lord, we come under full control of this inevitable time, not only after death, but also in a different way while living. When material life, when the material life of a wandering soul has ceased, O Achyuta, he may, he may attain the association of your devotees. In the commentary of our acharyas, it says, this is a literary ornament. He's describing, he's so excited about the outcome that he describes the outcome before the cause of the outcome. The cause of the outcome is the association of a devotee. And the fruit of that association of a devotee is that hankering for the temporary subsides and is taken away. Because another hankering takes its place. The hankering for Krishna and being in Krishna's association. How does that happen? Through association of devotees. So he's saying that about himself. I was living this ridiculous way, but Gargi or Gargamuni changed all that. He described you. He planted in my heart a desire to be with you and said, it's going to happen. So my hankerings changed. So that association of a devotee. And when he associates with them, there awakens in him devotion unto you, who are the goal of the devotees and the Lord of all causes and their effects. This verse that I just read, it's cited in Chaitanya Charitamrita in Lord Chaitanya's instructions to Sanatana Goswami about bhakti and how bhakti is awakened and how it continues. Very important association of devotees coming together like this. For so long, I have been pained by troubles in this world. I have been burning with lamentation. My six enemies are never satiated. I find no peace. Therefore, O giver of shelter, O Supreme Soul, please protect me. Now, he's just responding to take any benediction you like. He's not said, I want something. Please protect me from this onslaught of material existence. In the midst of danger, I have, by good fortune, approached your lotus feet, which are the source of all peaceful life, and which can eradicate all lamentation caused by material contamination. Your lotus feet are the truth, which makes one fearless and free from sorrow. Vishwanath is saying, Krishna is testing Muchukunda. How about this, Muchukunda? You have this Ishwara Bhav. Just continue with the Ishwara Bhav for a while. And then after you've enjoyed to your heart's content, then you can have my two lotus feet. Muchukunda is saying, no. Please don't make that happen. That's not a benediction. My benediction is, please protect me from a desire, for such desire. Please give me just... So, fast forward, because we're way over time. Fast forward is, he says, I want three things. It's a classic. It appears several times in the Bhagavatam. He wants three things. Please just keep me always engaged in your devotional service. That should be it, right? But he also asks for association of your devotees. Because in the association of your devotees, I'll hear about you. Because that's what devotees do. They talk about Krishna. And in hearing about you, my love for you will be strengthened and increased. So that should be sufficient. But he also asks for a well-wishing and compassionate attitude towards all living entities, because they're not zeros. They have a place in Krishna's kingdom. So I just want to be a well-wisher and have a friendly disposition towards all living entities. So lifetime after lifetime, I just want to be engaged in your service, in the association of the devotees, and a friendly disposition towards all living entities. So he passed Krishna's test. Krishna is very happy. Because of time, I'm just going to skip all the rest of the detail. Not only Muchukunda was awarded Krishna's association because he was hankering for Krishna, but here we are, 5,000 years later, honoring Muchukunda and the devotion of Muchukunda. Krishna likes to honor his devotee. So in addition to giving his association, he likes to honor his devotee. So here we are, honoring his devotee. Krishna likes that. It's nice to know that you're doing something that Krishna likes, isn't it? Krishna likes that. So Krishna left the cave. And he went back onto the battlefield. And Jarasandha now had come, because Krishna went out when Kalyavana only was there. And there's Kalyavana's army. Now there's Jarasandha and Jarasandha's army. Now Krishna already did it 17 times. So he could do it 18th time, but he chose by his own will to do something differently this time. He's allowed. So instead, Krishna ran. Now for Kshatriya, to run from the battlefield. And this is something that Kaliyavana said. You're from the Yadu dynasty. This isn't right. You shouldn't run. Stand and fight. You know, code of honor, please. Where's your dharma, Krishna? You're a member of the Yadu dynasty. You people follow dharma. You're not supposed to run. But when Krishna runs, he gets honor. It's a special name, Ranchor. In fact, one of the places that we visited in Dwarka, interesting, was the original deity that the great-grandson of Krishna, Vajranab, established in Dwarka, although he was the king of Mathura. He put a deity of Krishna in Dwarka called the Dwarkadish. That deity then later moved. The deity got up and went elsewhere. And the place where he is now, the same, that original deity, beautiful deity. Wasn't it an amazing deity? Those of you that saw it. He's called Ranchor, Ranchodji in their local language. Because Krishna ran from the battlefield. So Krishna ran from the battlefield. With Balaram. And they ran and ran and ran and ran to some other mountain and went up the mountain, and Jarasandha is calling them bad names. Coward. Stop. Fight me. Krishna kept running and running. So he looked everywhere for Krishna, couldn't find Krishna anywhere. How is Jarasandha going to find Krishna anyways? Couldn't find him anywhere. So he decided he would burn him in fire. Of course, the soul can't be burnt by fire, and Krishna can't be burnt by fire either, because the soul is of a different, spirit is of a different quality than matter. So he set the mountain on fire. It was a big mountain. Now, how tall was the mountain? No, it's 80 miles, 10 yojanas. 80 miles. You know any mountain that's 80 miles tall? How when an airplane flies in the sky, it's how many miles? A few miles. 5,000 feet. Anyway, 80 miles tall. Krishna and Balaram jumped off the mountain. Ooh, they had a nice... Jarasandha didn't see them flying in the sky. He thought they were dead. He went back to his kingdom, Magadha, puffed up, saying, I killed Krishna. Balaram. Later he's going to find out he didn't. Because it's said by our acharyas, Krishna did it that way because he wanted to hurry up and get back to Dwarka with Balaram, because he knew that Princess Rukmini needed his help. He went back for that reason. And on the way, that's where Balaram married Revati. Before they got back to Dwarka. And then comes the message from Rukmini, and that there is where Jarasandha finds he didn't kill Krishna because Krishna came and stole Rukmini. Very intriguing. Now these are just Krishna's Leela Shakti. Krishna's just doing nice things to delight the devotee. The non-devotee can't understand it at all. They think it's mythology. And for the devotee, it's just, how wonderful is my Krishna? So many varieties of ways he's enjoying. And he's reciprocating with Muchukundas and so many other nice devotees. Revati and Rukmini, and just reciprocating with his devotees in varieties of love. That's Krishna. He's an ocean of rasa with unlimited potencies, enjoying pastimes, showing us, and all of this is within his name. We just, you know, we don't have the key to open the treasure house of all the jewels inside. So the Bhagavatam is there. It gives us these jewels. And our acharyas hold up one and some other ones, and look at this one, look at that one. How wonderful is our Krishna. I'm way past time, so I'm going to end and let you all take breakfast. It's not going to be late. So how much time do we need for breakfast? What time should we return? 1 hour from now? 11:15? 55 minutes back here? Is that enough time? Yes? Okay. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.